Gwaka ish kyle work you hut to a sock. Yes na hutsati. Desitan a hut. Chukanedi yadi. Kagwantan dutch han a hut. Gautakan dach hunakau. My name is Glakaish Kyle Wark. I'm Klingit. I'm a raven from the Desitan clan. I'm a child of the Chukanedi. I'm a grandchild of the Kagwantan. I'm from the village by the cliff called Drum. I'm from the Lee of the North Wind people's territory, now living in exile. Today people call that Huna, Alaska. When I was a little kid, my great-uncle Ralph used to call me Uskaish, which is not my Tlingit name. It's actually a pet name, but it's something that people used to do a long time ago. They'd have a name that they grew up with that was just a pet name. It's based on my Tlingit name, which is Glakaish, but I didn't actually learn what that was until I was 6 or 7 or something like that. But I always knew that I was Uskaish. Uskaish means little daddy or cute little daddy, cute little father. And he called me that, I was told, because whenever my dad would go by, there'd be little Kyle, like a little shadow, following right behind him. So I was the little daddy. So a lot of my family actually would call me Uskaish, or at least use that occasionally from my earliest memories. So I always remember being called by a Tlingit name. But that was kind of unusual. We didn't talk about a lot of the rest of my family using our Tlingit names. It wasn't until I learned Tlingit in college, actually, that I learned how to introduce myself and say what my name is and what my clan is and where I'm from, that I really began using my Tlingit name more in public. And even then, I was a little shy about it. I was a little hesitant to kind of bring that out. You know, it's the Tlingit introduction in particular is pretty long and fairly detailed. That was a really short example that I gave earlier. I've given hour-long presentations on my name, actually in multiple different contexts for multiple different reasons, and I can go on for quite a while just telling you who I am, who my family is, who my great-grandparents are and great-great-grandparents and things like that, and my aunts and uncles. And all that's part of the Tlingit introduction, so that's all wrapped up in what my name is and what it means to have a name, actually. But it probably wasn't until I got to First Alaskans Institute in December 2012 that I really began using that Tlingit introduction more consistently and more publicly. I'd introduce myself at meetings and at dialogues using my native language, and I was really happy to be able to do that. There's not a whole lot of people in my generation who can speak Tlingit or can introduce themselves properly, and I'm really glad to have been able to have learned that initially in college, but then also expanded it a lot through my own research and conversation with other speakers and other learners. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until fairly recently, actually within this last year, within 2016, that our work at First Alaskans began trying to use our native names more in daily conversation. So I'll refer to some of my colleagues as Akhshak and Khile, which are their Yupik and Haida names for two of my coworkers, respectively. And on Facebook, I tried several years ago, actually, to update my profile to put my native name on there. What was it? It was like 2 years ago that we started putting our native names on our business cards. So my business card now says Kyle Glakaish Wark, and then in parentheses it says Tlingit. And I was really happy to see that. And I wanted to be able to put that on my social media, but Tlingit spelling, we use a lot of parentheses, or not parentheses, quotation marks and periods. The period is an actual letter in our alphabet, and it makes a glottal stop. And I only know my name from what my grandma has told me it is. I never saw it written down. It's never been written down, I think, until I started writing it, as far as I know, really. There might be older records, but I don't know where they are. So I had to spell it myself, just based on the pronunciation. And I put a glottal stop in the middle of it, Glakaish. And Facebook would tell me that wasn't a real word. It would say, that's not a real name. That's not a legitimate name. You have too many periods in your name. It would tell me. That was the actual error message I got. You've got too many periods in your name. I later tried to spell Uskaish correctly with a apostrophe after the S for a pinched S and apostrophe after the K for a pinched K, and it told me you have too many commas in your or too many quotation marks in your name, same error message. It was really frustrating. So, but later on, as I thought more about it, I realized that a lot of Thingit people have names that's something or other ish. There was a Yaktat Icht shaman who was named Teik Ish, Stony Father. And the way that these were normally spelled was two words. So I decided I could take my name and split it up into two words. I made up the spelling. I can change the spelling. So I just put a space in between instead of a period, and I was finally able to put it up on Facebook. So now it says Glockau Ish Kyle as my first name and Wark as my last name, which I'm pretty happy about. I'd seen other people using their native names on Facebook and was really jealous that they were able to spell it, that Facebook would accept it. So I was really happy when I was finally able to link my native name on there. I don't know exactly how using my native name in public has changed people's perceptions of me. I think for a lot of instances, even when I introduce myself in Thingit at gatherings I've been at, not just work gatherings, but in my private life even, I introduce myself. Very few people call me Glockau Ish, and it's kind of a... It's not the hardest name that I've heard of native names to pronounce or anything like that, but it's still, I think, enough of a stumbling block that people don't want to take the chance and say it wrong or something like that. So most people still call me Kyle. There was a really good pun that a friend of mine introduced in a Facebook recently. He was trying to type the Thingit word Ishan, which means like poor, sad, pitiful, and he started just typing that Ish, and Facebook thought he was trying to tag me. He thought that was just so scandalous that Facebook would associate my name with Ishan and another friend of ours, Chashya Ish. Yeah, that was a great post. So that's really the only public change that's happened from starting to use my native name.
Would you prefer that people try to say your name, even if they butcher it? I mean...
I think I would be happy with that. I actually like it if people called me Uska Ish, because it's the name that I earned for myself. It's the name that really designates something special about me, and it's something that nobody else has, as far as I know. And it's more of a casual name. It's a friendly name. It's like a nickname. It's the only nickname I've ever had. Glockau Ish is great, and I wouldn't mind people calling me it. In fact, my coworkers, like I said, have started calling me that more recently. But in Thingit, names are At'u. Achsai At'u Aya, you would say in Thingit. So At'u is a special class of property in Thingit culture that is something that the clan has paid for, often in blood. Clan crests usually involve the death of an ancestor in some sort of interaction with that animal, or some sort of really intense spiritual encounter with an animal or a mountain or a glacier or something like that, a bay. And that story then gets codified as a clan crest or as a specific piece of regalia with that crest on it, or name associated with that story, and all our names are At'u. And so there's something, and I don't know how they resolved that issue in the past, but you wouldn't wear your At'u to the store. That's an example that I've heard. You don't put on your clan crest or your clan tunic or something like that to go buy groceries. You have to pay when you display your At'u. You have to pay the other clans for the right to have your At'u recognized, your claim to your At'u, to your clan property recognized by the other clans. And so there's something trivializing. I fear, I have that hesitancy, I have that feeling that using my name in common conversation is almost, it's desacralizing it, it's secularizing it. And so I don't mind necessarily reserving my name, my Thingit name, for more ceremonial occasions, which again is part of why I think Uska Ish is a preferable name that I wish people would call me. It's a complicated thing because it's part of my identity. I really like when I can't think of his name, Kudich Ta, Byron Mallett, when he introduces himself in public gatherings, he'll often say, "Hi, my name is Byron Mallett, and who I am is Kudich Ta." You know, there's something really fundamental about having a name in Tlingit culture that's not just something that's associated with you or attached to you or, you know, draped about you like clothes, like ordinary clothes. It's something that's been invested in you. You know, in our culture, when you receive a name, you become that ancestor that possessed that name for you, the one who earned that name for your clan. And we'll use this in kin terms. So when my dad, who is non-native, was adopted into the Chukaneti clan, he was given the name Ankaudahan, and that name was the uncle, I think it was the uncle, maybe it was the grandpa, of one of my grandma's brothers, Walter Pratt. And Walter was 20 years older than my dad, so he was probably in his 50s or 60s, and my dad was in his 30s and 40s. And whenever Walter would see my dad, he'd say, "Hey, what's going on, Grandpa?" Because Ankaudahan was his grandpa. So there's something that transforms about us when we get a name invested in us. So being able to put that on my Facebook page is somehow giving that part of me room to breathe and giving it acknowledgement in this digital space. And so even though it's a little funky with the you have to pay to display your atu aspect of Tlingit culture, I think that there's something worthwhile about being able to incorporate it into this modern space. It's like texting in Tlingit and that sort of thing. There's something kind of delightful about using this sort of colonial technology for indigenous purposes. I'm subverting the technology. I'm really happy to see the proliferation of native names in public life. You know, when I first started at FAI, our board chair, Willie Hensley, would always be introduced as Willie Igriok Hensley, and I'm still terrible at pronouncing the Nipiak G's, but Igriok, it is who he is, and being able to recognize that part of him was really important to his stage presence, his persona that he brought into public affairs, and he's a great speaker in any case. And it, you know, it was a little sad to me that a lot of our, and you can see that even in a lot of the names that are preserved for Western Alaskan peoples, a lot of the Yupik and the Inupiaq, they still have names like Sunungatuk and things like that. That's their formal Western last name, which is kind of weird anyway, because it's codifying, you know, one of their ancestors who just happened to have the name Sunungatuk, and then they missionaries made it a family name. But I'd always kind of regretted in some sense that, you know, like my mom's family were the St. Clairs. There's no real association with any St. Clair. I don't know who St. Clair was even. That was just something that a missionary or a government official slapped on to one of my ancestors and said, "You're St. Clair now." But we've always had these native names, and they were kind of hiding below the radar. They were underground, and it wasn't that we were ashamed of them, but they were somehow separated. We lived a Tlingit life, and we lived a Western life, and they weren't overlapping in a lot of areas. And seeing the proliferation of native names is really about that recognition that I am a Tlingit person living in this westernized world, and I don't have to subvert that native identity anymore to live a Western existence. I don't have to stop being Tlingit to be an American or to be a Christian or these things that our ancestors were told. You can't be American unless you stop being Indian. You can't be Christian unless you stop being Indian. So the proliferation of native names really is about reasserting our indigenous identities and reintegrating them back into our daily life. And whatever problematics I find from the idea of secularizing some of these sacred terms, you know, that's kind of incidental. That's fine-tuning. That's not the kind of the broad sweep of the movement. And, you know, my wife and I have talked about when we have kids, are we going to give them a Western name, a Western first name? Will we give them a Tlingit name that's on their birth certificate? And what does that mean to have a native name on your birth certificate instead of something that we just give you at a ceremonial and it's not written down? It's an interesting question. It's an interesting problem to have. My name, Kyle, my parents picked out of a baby name book because they thought it looked nice. You know, Wark, I think, is a name that was assigned to some of my Scottish ancestors I don't know, 500 or 1,000 years ago, because they lived by a castle, which was an earthwork, a gatework, a wall, you know. It wasn't anything necessary about them. It didn't reflect their Scottish clan or any of that heritage, you know, it was just put on them by somebody else.
Glaucoish,
though.
Where you're from, though. I mean, I guess it does. It does. Serve a little bit.
Yeah, there's a little bit. Yeah. But, you know, there's a lot of these people that aren't just named Forest or something like that because their ancestors lived by a forest. I mean, right. There's a little something there. But Glaucoish, it's a specific incident within my clan. It's a specific individual who had a particular lived experience, and that particular lived experience was recorded as a name that was given to him. And that particular experience gets reincarnated down through the generations as that name is passed on and invested in new clan members. My name is seven generations old, which means that the incident that I was named after happened around the 1820s, I think 1825. And the last person to carry my name was my great-great-grandma's generation, I believe. So there's a lot more meaning to having the name Glaucoish than there is meaning to having Kyle Wark. Although, funnily enough, both my names are Scottish Gaelic terms, and they mean roughly a painful boil. Together, there's an exact reference in the Oxford English Dictionary that he had a working Kyle, which meant that he had a painful boil.